It's a jam-packed edition of NBL Now, and boy, have we got a lot to talk about, including the signing of Xavier Cooks to the Sydney Kings. We break that all down. A re-signing in Perth. We talk more about the grand final series and now the infamous Little Island comments. And what do the Tasmania Jack Jumpers need to do ahead of Game 2? That is all coming up on NBL Now. So great to be with you. It is Wednesday, the 20th of March. We are a couple of days away from Game 2 in the Championship Series between Melbourne and Tasmania. I'm Jack Heverin, Derek Rucker alongside me. We will both be on the island on Friday night for Game 2, and we'll get to that very shortly, Ruck. But we're recording this at about 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time this morning. So you've had enough time to take in the news of Xavier Cooks, who late last night signed a 3-year deal with the Sydney Kings on what Olgun Yulic is saying is the biggest deal in NBL history.
Well, it's big time news for the Sydney Kings and their supporter base, but it's exactly the reason why you go out and get a coach like Brian Gorge and his ability to draw big time talent, his ability to evaluate this talent and then make it all come together, which is yet to happen. But great signs early on for the Kings. And Xavier Cooks is someone who we've seen have tremendous success as a great player, as a great leader. He's an MVP. He's a two-time champion. So this is massive. He instantly becomes one of the top three players in the competition the moment he steps into the league. And it's also great from an NBL perspective that we get one of the top guys back into the competition and not have to follow his journey overseas.
I want to go back to something that you said about 3 weeks ago when Brian Gorgian was signed as coach of the Sydney Kings. And on this show, on the Wednesday edition, you said, well, this is bad news for the rest of the competition because Brian makes semifinals. That's just what he does. So now that they've got Brian Gorgian and they've got Xavier Cooks, it must be even worse news.
It is the worst news. I'm sure everyone else around the league was, you know, hoping that Cooks was not coming back and that for some reason, you know, there would be an offer overseas that really enticed Xavier to play. But this is a big step. And when you get Australian talent of this quality, it alleviates the pressure on having to sign great imports. Now they can be patient, not rush their import selection, review the guys that they had this season perhaps, and see how that will manifest. But it really has gotten tighter. And I said, yep, Brian Gorgian makes Final Fours. I'm going to go out on a limb right now while we're in the midst of the championship series in NBL 24 and tick Sydney in for NBL 25 championship series. That is getting done. I guarantee it.
That you just put a whole new lens on way too early predictions. You realize that?
I know, but can you really argue with me? You know they're going to go out and get quality pieces. And sometimes you begrudge an organization when they go out and make these types of moves. But I'm feeling really excited about it. I'm really keen to see what the Kings put together now. And I can only imagine how excited that fan base is after the disappointment of NBL 24.
And the last one on this, and there is an episode uploaded now, however you consume your podcast, of an emergency marketplace show that we did last night. Olgun and I got together very late last night to record it, and we break the deal down. The thing that interests me, Ruck, and you've spent a bit of time in front office, so you understand how this works as well, is that I'd imagine the other teams around the league would be pretty nervous right now because in the space of 3 weeks, Sydney have got arguably the best coach of all time, the MVP from 2 years ago. Like, to me, that's a real statement of intent about how aggressive they're going to be.
It is, Jack. And one thing we must note and clarify is that the NBL does not have a hard salary cap. It is a soft salary cap. So I'm seeing a lot of people in forums and on posts in the comments talking about, oh, how are they doing this? They're more than entitled to spend whatever they want. Now, you can also have someone as a marquee player. I'm not sure of the specifics of whether Cooks is going to be a marquee player. I presume he would be. So ultimately, it comes down to how much tax, so to speak, is a franchise willing to pay in order to ensure a high degree of success. Now, I use the word ensure, and perhaps that's not appropriate in all circumstances because we've seen where teams have spent money and got and not received the success that they had anticipated. But I can ensure you that the Kings are going to achieve a high level of success next year.
Let's punch through a couple of other names. One is Christian Doolittle, who re-signs with the Perth Wildcats. A proactive move by Perth only a few days after being eliminated from the semi-final series. Do you like this?
Solid signing. I thought that Doolittle's offensive productivity started to tail off at the end. He probably in the offseason needs to get to work on his skill development. He's still a relatively young player. He's not as polished consistently enough as I would have liked to have seen, but he's a great physical piece. He obviously enjoyed playing for Coach John Riley. And when he was playing well, they were playing well. He's a good defensive player, can be a stopper on the ball. So in order to maintain continuity, I think it's a really good signing for the Perth Wildcats.
What does that tell us then, potentially, about what they're going to do or what they should do with the other import spot?
Well, I imagine they need to get another guard that can shoot the ball really well, Jack. And with the loss of Alex Saar also imminent, you have to look at shoring up that big spot and finding someone that can go with Keanu Pender. We saw what happened when Pender was down physically. It really hit them hard in the final two games of that series against the Jack Jumpers. So those are spots where I think that they were vulnerable and need to be patched up in NBL 25.
A name that we haven't seen in the league for a very long time, and I want to go back to about 2014 and 15 when he was a very young player with the Adelaide 36ers, is Brock Motum. He's been plying his trade in Europe and in Asia for virtually all of his professional career. At 33 years of age, he's spoken about the desire to want to come back to Australia and raise his family in this great country of ours. Where do you see him fitting if he does return to the NBL next season?
Come on, Jack. You know the place. He's a Brisbane boy, went to State High. There's only one place for Brock Motum to go, and he would fit in perfectly here. In our league, he can play the four and the five, and that's exactly what Brisbane need. He can start at the five in case Harrison isn't available. He can be a great complement to Josh Bannon, who's proven himself as a future star. And I think if I were Brisbane, I'd be making strong recruiting pitches towards Brock Motum. He's a guy who's very good. His body is good. He's athletic. He can shoot the ball. He's credentialed. He's experienced. It seems like a no-brainer to me. And I would be proactive because I'm sure there are other clubs looking to make a move. He can change the fortunes of your program and your front line immediately. As soon as he puts that pen to paper, your team is better.
Let's move to the championship series. Things are getting pretty spicy, and they have been even before Sunday, but the Little Island comments. We've seen Dean Vickerman, Scott Roth responded on the broadcast with you guys in the pre-game show. The comments have kind of been simmering away since. Where have you got things at since Sunday?
Both guys are right, okay? Scott Roth, this has been something he's preached since day one in takeover down in Tasmania. And it was a great strategy, a great genuine ploy to rally that island around that team. And it's been beyond successful, Jack. I have people messaging me saying how great Scott is and how much they love him and how proud they are of the fact that he has taken hold of Tasmania in his basketball soul. That's great. Now, Dean Vickerman is right also. And as I said in the pregame show the other day, I kind of get sick of defend the island talk. And Scott Roth is my man. He's someone I really look up to and have for decades. So I understand where Dean's coming from. And Dean's like, enough of this garbage. We're coming out there to kick your butt. You can talk about all that island stuff you want. It even raised conflict in the pregame show. Drew backed Scott Roth. I backed Vickerman. Now, I got some things I'm probably going to have to be careful with upon my arrival Friday in Tasmania. I might need a little bit of security down there, Jack, to get me to the hotel. I obviously won't expect a red carpet treatment on my arrival, but it's perfect. Like, this is what we need. Be authentic. Dean Vickerman's being exactly how we want him to be. Be true to who you are. And also, it rallies his team around him. Brian Gorgeous has been great at this for years. Like, it's us against them. We got to go down there and get game two.
So with that in mind, and as you say, we are going to be there on Friday night. I'm really looking forward to it. How fired up should the Jack Jumpers be? Not only because of all of the stuff that's being said, but also because they were not at their best on Sunday.
I think Scott Roth's biggest challenge this week is trying to temper his team and not let them use all their emotions before the game. We have 4 days before the game is tipped, and I think it's really important that he manage the psychology and the emotion of his players. Jack, I'm hyped up, and it's only Wednesday. I'm ready to go. And you don't want to go out there. You don't want to expend all your nervous energy too early in the week. And Scott Roth is experienced. He's played around the world. He would understand this. But not only his players, the crowd is going to be off the chain down there. As I said, I've received a lot of messages from Jack Jumper supporters, and I love their enthusiasm. They've also expressed to me how difficult it is to get tickets, which is which is amazing. And the one theme that they've expressed to me and have asked me, which I have no answer for, is when are we getting a new venue? And isn't that tremendous? After only three seasons, there is a public belief that they already need a bigger venue.
That's brilliant. And the opportunity is there, no doubt about it. And I think it'll come. It's been a big week for Tasmanian sport, obviously, with the AFL team being announced in their jumper and colours and all that sort of stuff. Friday night's going to be fascinating. Ruck, to dive down a little bit deeper into this game, and it is something that we touched on in the Coca-Cola cool down, but the pace and the tempo, Melbourne pushed that basketball at every single opportunity, particularly in the first half. And Tasmania are known for the way that they want to play the game on their terms. So from the opening tip, how do the Jack Jumpers control the tempo?
Well, I thought the first quarter in Melbourne was a good quarter for the Jack Jumpers. They moved the ball. They ran their offense. They got good looks. They scored 24 points, which if you scored 96 points in game one, it would have been a much different. It would have been a much different look. If they scored 96 in Tasmania, I think they win the game. Now, how do they get that done? It's just discipline and patience and the point guards, Jordan Crawford in particular, and to a lesser extent, Sean McDonald. They must perform better. We hadn't seen McDonald have a down game for some time, but he wasn't good in game one. Both those guys are intelligent players. I'm sure Scott Roth would have coached them up during the week. They must move the ball and stick to who they are and defend. That's the other part. They're number two in the league defensively all season. That defensive performance in game one was not up to standard. You naturally defend better at home, and I expect that to be the case. So it's just all about ball movement. Hey, hold that thing for 15 seconds on the offensive end, defend, and then if you defend properly, there will be moments in the game where you can go early just due to numbers, turnovers, good rebounding situations. I think that is the key to winning game two for the Jack Jumpers.
Sean McDonald's a really interesting one while we're on that just quickly as well. Most improved player in the league. He's had a phenomenal season. His four games against Melbourne in NBL 24 read 0, 4, 0, and 6. So for whatever reason, when it comes to Melbourne United, Sean McDonald can't get into the game.
I'd give you the reasons. The reasons are Shea Ili and Matthew Dellavedova. As a young player, you're going against highly credentialed and experienced defensive guys who take extreme pride in their defensive performances. So this is a real learning moment for Sean McDonald, and a moment where he needs to step up and show his value and that he can play playoff basketball against internationally high-level defenders. And I'm very curious. This is kind of the game within the game. Can he come off the bench and get that done? Because Melbourne United have two elite defenders in his position, and he can't escape them. One of those two guys is generally in the court, generally on the court, so there's no getting around it. He is going to have to tackle that situation and continue to provide what he did against everybody else other than Melbourne United throughout the season. He's talented. He can shoot the ball. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Before we finish, yesterday on this very show, Damon Lowry, who was, gee, was in a mood yesterday. Damon, he was in a mood, your man. So the only person who can stop Luke Travers in this series is Dean Vickerman. What did you think when you heard that?
Yeah, I get where Damon's coming from, but Luke Travers played 26 minutes in game two, which is about what he's done all season. And the other thing is, Dean Vickerman is one of the best coaches in the league when it comes to getting bench guys quality minutes with an eye on the future. And in particular, Kyle Bowen. Kyle Bowen struggled a little bit in the Illawarra series, and I was curious to see how Dean utilized him in game one. Dean didn't change his strategy at all. Kyle Bowen played 14 minutes and played much better. Got 8 rebounds and was a plus 15 in that little bit of time. So not only was he good in that game and helped them win, but Dean knows down the track, and by down the track, I mean over the next 2 or 3 years, Kyle Bowen is a piece that's going to be very valuable because Luke Travers may not even be around. So you've got to figure out a way to get him important minutes, and they're going to be invaluable as Kyle Bowen, who is only 22 years old or 23 years old, as he continues to mature as a player, these minutes are big time important to his growth.
Can't wait for Friday. Looks like I'm going to have to escort you around the city of Hobart and make sure that you're safe when we get there. So there'll be no mention of what time we land and where we're staying and all that sort of stuff. Just Jack Jumpers fans, go easy on Derek Rucker. He means well.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us, Ruck. We'll catch you next time. And thanks for being with us on NBL Now. Don't forget, of course, our special emergency edition of The Marketplace recorded late last night with Olgun Ulich from ESPN.com.au is live now. And a little later on today, a very special chat with one of Tasmania's number one fans. That is all coming up. We'll see you next time.